All right, well, let me see if I can introduce our speaker here. He has such a long list of credentials here.
Keep it short.
All right, okay, I'll go for it. Our speaker tonight is Sky Kirshner. He's Executive Director of Kanawha Counseling Center in Charleston. The program title tonight is Declutter Your Life, Preparing to Let Go of Things Creating Clutter or Stress in Your Life. He is an adjunct faculty at WVU School of Medicine, Department of Behavioral Medicine and Psychiatry. He's also an adjunct faculty at WVU School of Social Work. He's a clinical member and former approved supervisor of the American Association of Marriage and Family Therapists. He's certified in critical incident stress management. I bet you that stresses you out. Trained in the use of nonviolent communication and ordained to ministry by the United Methodist Church in 1984. He is a licensed professional counselor, licensed certified clinical social worker.
That's enough?
Okay. Yeah. And he's been adjunct faculty for a number of graduate programs. I'll give you Mr. Sky Kirshner.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. It's a lovely drive coming up here. Feel free to adjust your chairs if that's more comfortable. I always get a crick in my neck when I'm looking 90 degrees to the left or to the right. I was surprised that Ann invited me to speak after I saw the pictures of all of your other speakers, and I thought, I'm the wrong gender, but then I remembered that clergy are usually genderless, so I'm glad to be here. As you may know, I was on the Hoarders show, to the chagrin of my wife. It wasn't our house. So I thought I'd tell you the story about that and then give you a couple comments about stuff and clutter and the stuff of our lives, and then have an open forum and hear what your best tips are for dealing with stuff and clutter. About 8 years ago, back when I used to watch television, I used to watch the Neat Show and the Professional Organizer shows and all those cool shows where people would come in and redo their houses and make them more workable. And after watching those shows for a couple of months, you know, watching, doing nothing in my own, with my own clutter, right? Great time waster. I realized, I bet there's a professional organizer here in Charleston. Why don't I Google and see if I can find one? And sure enough, there was somebody in Charleston, Rita McGee. She was very reasonable, $30 an hour. And I said, come to my office, because I've got stuff, and I really don't like the energy, you know, the way it is. I want my clients, when they come into the office, to really feel at peace and to feel, and especially because one time this couple walked in, it was my first session with them, they sat down, and I said, okay, so what brings you here? And the wife says, well, he's a pack rat. And I looked at my office, and there was a pile here, and a pile there, and a pile there, and I said, you know, you all probably didn't see a picture of my office before you came in here, but I bet I don't have a whole lot of legitimacy with you right now. She nodded like this, and he said, no, this is great. And they never came back. So I realized I needed to do something with it. So Rita, you know, came, and she was awesome. She rolled up her sleeves, and, you know, I told her what I was looking for. You know, I wanted... You know, the clients usually sit over there, and I wanted this area to kind of be okay. And, you know, anything that I'm looking at can be a mess, but I want them to have a good experience. And to my surprise, she started with the closets, the cupboards. You know, I said, nobody can see in there, but we tore it, you know, brought it all out and did it all. And she wanted to get rid of those ring binders that I've been carrying around for 30 years that I haven't looked at. And I was amazed at the anxiety that came up in me. Oh my gosh, that's my dream journal. From back when I was in seminary and I was writing down all my dreams and I haven't looked at it. She went, why do you have this? You know, so she really helped me to get rid of that stuff. So, you know, after I got over that hurdle, And we did redid my office. I said, you know, we've got a staff of 8 therapists here. How about if you, you know, I'm willing to pay for you to do the same magic with these other therapists. And they had very, you know, some of them said, oh, no, this is my stuff. Nobody touches my stuff. You know, the there are 3 parts to the human brain. There's the alligator part. There's the, what's the next part up called? The bird brain. And then there's the mammal brain. And the alligator part is in charge of things like breathing, eating, sex, and territory. And that part of the brain isn't very verbal. It doesn't talk well to the part of the brain that's used to language and logic and reason. So people got very territorial. But after a while, you know, started to open up, and people started enjoying having Rita come. So that was all great. That was a number of years ago. And then the neat and organizing channels kind of morphed into these hoarding channels. And that was after I stopped watching TV, so I didn't know about this phenomenon, how they kind of changed into this other thing. So, and if you've ever seen these shows, at the beginning, at the end, they say, you know, if you have a problem with hoarding, contact us. We might want to come and talk to you and film your house, right? And everybody's saying, oh, not our house, right? But people actually write, and they say, you know, and usually it's people that are that have hit the wall, and they recognize, I need some extra help here. And maybe the combination of the humiliation of being on international television with the resources that the show will bring, because they pay the folks, and they pay the therapist, and they pay the professional organizer. So lo and behold, there's this family in Kanawha County who signs up. And the hoarding folks, this is I think there are 2 hoarding shows. One's on the Learning Channel, and the other is on A&E. So this was the Learning Channel, which is Discovery Studios. It's the Discovery Channel, and they're very snooty over there because they're doing real science. They say it's not like the other hoarding show, they say. So they had this Kanawha County family, and they contacted Rita, because Rita is a member of the Professional Organizers of America, and they said, would you be willing to do this? And Rita said yes, and they said, do you know any therapists? And so she recommended me, and they had a couple other folks, and they did phone interviews to find who would be a good therapist for their show, and I guess everybody else backed out, so they ended up with me. And as I was thinking about whether I wanted to do this or not, I said, you know, give me a couple days to think about it, but give me the names and numbers of other therapists that have done the show, because I want to find out, was this a good thing for the clients? You know, were the clients really helped by it? So I called some of the other therapists, and they said, yeah, this was a really good thing. One guy had worked with several families, and they were all on the show. One woman had worked with just one family. But it was a really good thing, except for the one in Silver Spring, Maryland. The guy had lived in a gated community. And from the outside of the house, you couldn't tell that he was a hoarder. But once if he let you in, and once it was on TV, it went like wildfire. The neighbors found out, and they tried to get him kicked out of the gated community because he was lowering the property value. You would think, you know, you're on TV, you're raising the property value. But no, he was lowering that was their claim. So they went to court, and I mean, it was a terrible thing. So, you know, I kind of did some due diligence and, you know, found out, you know, what's going on with the family. And they had, well, at any rate, I decided to do it. So, and then I had a couple weeks to prepare, so I started reading everything I could find, and I was surprised I didn't have a whole lot already, because as a clergy person, we hoard books, and we buy books for the titles, and we don't read them. We have boxes of books. Ask any clergy. When I talked to the clergy association about me doing this, you know, I said, does anybody else hoard books? And they said, now you're meddling. Don't tell us about that, you know. So it was amazing to me as I was talking with folks how many people have a hoarding story in their life, a relative, an in-law, And also, how many people have their own private hoard in their own house? You know, we have our junk room. Half of it's full of my mother's things from after, you know, after she died, and the other half is, you know, various sports activities, paraglider motors, you know, that I haven't done since our daughter was born because I just lost the courage / stupidity to be doing these high-risk activities. And, you know, but they represent the time in my life that I'm just not quite ready to let go of. It would be my man cave, except I can't get into the room. So I decided, you know, there's in an attorney's situation, there's what's called the clean hands policy, which is that if you're going to try to help somebody around an issue, it's good if you've worked on that issue yourself. So besides reading the books and things like that, I decided I'm going to go into my junk room and try to do something with it. And all of the things that I'd read about crashed in on me in one afternoon. The main things about, there's a lot of interesting stuff about hoarding. One is that hoarding, there's a part of it that's genetic. And they've actually mapped which it's on chromosome number 14 or 16. There's a little switch there, and if you've got that switch turned on, you're going to hoard. And there seems to be an evolutionary, you know, survival element to hoarding. Humans aren't the only animals that hoard. Squirrels hoard nuts. Last year, I don't know how it was up here, but we had a lot of squirrels looking for nuts because they're, what did they call it? The
mast.
The mast was very low. And there was a collapse of the colonies down in Kanawha County, and now there's high mast and not a lot of squirrels, right?
So you're more nuts down in Tulsa.
That's right, and it's good for business. That's right. You know, so but there is that survival element of being able, and you know, folks who grew up in the Depression or kids of parents from the Depression, you know, there's. You know, you eat all the food. You know, I've got my hoard from the food I didn't eat, you know, here tonight. I'm taking that home because you never know what's going to happen on the interstate. I might hit a deer and be stuck there all night, and then I'll have something to eat. So there are some other things just to kind of give you a little profile. There's, in my experience and also in the literature, there are basically two kinds of ways of collecting. One is that you just get so overwhelmed by what's going on, you aren't able to do something with it. And when you try to go into the clutter room or you try to deal with that room that you don't like, it starts to feel like nothing I do makes a difference. And so you just kind of give up and you watch the hoarder show instead of deal with your room. And one of the things I've noticed is when somebody comes up to me and say, "Oh, I saw you on that show. I love that show." The way I know that somebody might have a problem, they tape the show. And they keep all, they hoard the episodes. I watch that show over and over again. Really? Why do you do that? But there's an issue going on there. There are some other things on the other side of the... So there's kind of the depressive hoarding, which is it got out of control and now I don't know what to do with it. And every time I try to do something with it, I start to feel overwhelmed and have trouble getting going. Or I might get going, but it lasts about an hour. And then I walk back in and there are 10 more books that I've bought or whatever. And then the other side is more of the sort of obsessive compulsive where I feel I need, you know, I really, if I get rid of this, something bad is going to happen. There are a lot of thought processes that go with this. I might need this someday. My granddaughter might need this someday. Right. You know, since I've been doing this, a lot of people come to me now with this, which is kind of interesting because it's a fairly embarrassing thing. You know, people, you know, they usually don't ask for help until they've hit a wall. But in the Horton show, you go to the house, but now people bring me their pictures. And, you know, so, right, and they, so they start collecting pictures of their Horton stuff. You know, but in one case, the actually, this was on the show. The mother had, she wasn't throwing the used coffee filters away. And on the kitchen counter, there were over 300 used coffee filters.
My God.
And I said, that's a lot of coffee filters. And she said, yeah. And I said, what do you, she made it, she had a very good sense of humor. She says, my compost pile. And I said, really? And it was. Do you have a garden? No, but I might someday. And if I do, so there's this, I might need this, or somebody might need this, or this would be wasteful if I got rid of it. There are some other things that I think are really interesting, and this is what happens to me besides feeling overwhelmed when I go into my hoard room. People that have some of these tendencies tend to be very detail-oriented. And so they'll notice, so for example, I'll make the mistake of opening up a box, and then I start looking at all those things, I don't remember having this till I opened up the box. I had this little turtle collection. I don't know why I had this turtle collection, but, it was time to do something with it. Was I able to do something with it? No, because as soon as I started looking at them, I thought, isn't this beautiful? Honey, come and look at the, don't show me those turtles again. I don't want to see them. But look at the difference between these turtles. And one person that was written up was collecting bottle caps. And was collecting two Pepsi bottle caps, but one was a little bit different from the other, so I've got to keep both of them. So there's that tendency to notice and to really appreciate the aesthetic of, these turtles are a little bit different, and look at the way this neck is here, and it's different from this neck over here. My wife rolls her eyes because, she doesn't want to, she wants to get rid of it, so... Which is good. That's why I married her, right? I need that spark person to get me going. The other thing is difficulty making decisions. And this is why I touch a piece of paper more than once, even though getting things done says touch every piece of paper just once, because I don't know what to do with it. Do I want to go to this thing on this guy talking about hoarding at the Parkersburg Country Club? I don't know. Maybe I'll put it here and I'll decide later, right? And a lot of my piles are, these are things I'm going to decide later. And what I found is it's really helpful because a year later when I get to that pile, I can just take the whole thing and throw it away because it's, all of those events have done and I didn't have to make a decision because I completely forgot about them and it's over. Americans, North Americans, tend to be thing-oriented. You all probably know that just by observation, but there's one really interesting thing about the English language and about how we communicate to babies, how we teach them language, and I want to share that with you. When we're teaching a baby language, right? What do you say to a baby? Let's say you're the baby. What do I say to the baby when I hold this thing up? Cup. I say cup. Right? I say cup, bottle, doggy. Right? All nouns. In Japan, the way they teach, the way a mother would teach the Japanese language, do you know what she does when she holds the cup up to the baby?
Drink.
No, that's good. That's a verb, but a different thing, because Japan is a very social etiquette country and language. They say, thank you, please, thank you, please, thank you. They don't concentrate on the thing at all. They don't mention the thing. The thing is irrelevant. What matters is the pattern of interaction and saying please and thank you. Oh, thank you. You're welcome. Thank you. Isn't that interesting?
I've noticed that too. So why isn't it?
Oh, good. So it's true. That's crazy.
Well, I guess.
I just made it up, but I wasn't sure that it was.
You're welcome. But why isn't everything either a please or a thank you instead of a cup and a saucer? How do they...
Because it's what the language values, what the culture values. In Native American culture, the first parts of speech that infants learn are verbs. That's why names are running bear, dances with wolves, shouts with fists in the air, or whatever his girlfriend's name was. Right? It's all verbs. They're more action-oriented. So the whole culture and the whole language is affected, and we North Americans, European languages, thing-oriented. So where does it come from? I don't know, but it gets reinforced just by our language affects the way we think about things, right? So things tend to be very important for us. The word clutter comes from the Old English word clot. Isn't that interesting?
Very.
And one of the things that I've noticed as I've gotten better with the clutter in my life is that I think about the way clutter is clotting up or blocking the energy of my life, right? So feng shui is looking at the energy of the room and how does the energy circulate through the room. So just like a clot affects the circulation of the energy of the body, clutter affects the circulation of the energy of a lot of things. It affects the circulation of the energy of the room, if you're into that. It affects the circulation of financial resources, right? Do you know that one of the top 10 growing companies in the United States is rent-a-space garage units, right? If you want to be in business, if you want a really good business, start one of those because people, what do they have? They have in Charleston these little pods that you can put in. Because your garage being full now isn't enough, so now we've put a pod in your driveway, so you have even more room for the stuff that you can't get rid of. What's that?
That you can't get rid of.
Yeah, right, that you can't get rid of. And then you'll need a pod for your pod and all of that. So it's amazing, but as I've thought about the way clutter is connected with the clotting of circulation, it occurs to me that we don't just have clutter in terms of things. We have clutter, emotional clutter, baggage that I'm holding on to from the past that isn't doing me a whole lot of good, but for some reason I'm attached to it. I don't want to let it go. What other forms of clutter are there? Relationship clutter, right? Time clutter. You know, I'm cluttering up my time with, that's why I don't watch TV anymore. That was one of the clots of my energy. So there's a wonderful book called Clearing Your Clutter with Feng Shui by Karen Kingston. And I would recommend that book highly because she really looks at this holistic view. Clearing Your Clutter with Feng Shui. Feng Shui is the Asian, maybe Chinese, Japanese word for looking at how energy of space is in. And, you know, people that get really into it, like they would say, oh, that mirror's in a very good place because that's the prosperity corner and you want to have energy over in the prosperity corner. I mean, it gets very detailed, but for me, I just like looking at the idea of, you know, how does the air circulate? You know, just this past year, and it happens about once a year these days, a woman in California died because when you get to be a massive hoarder, a number of things happen. One is you stop inviting people over because you're so embarrassed. Two, you start to have these little canyons through your house. Or in the hoarding house that I was working in, you know, sometimes there will be a pathway. There wasn't a pathway because there was a 6-inch layer of smashed down plastic bottles because they didn't throw anything away. They just threw it on the floor, and then you'd walk on it. It was like walking on this cushy mat of things. But, you know, you get these canyons, like say somebody can't throw magazines or newspapers away. This one woman, just a couple of months ago, died because one of her canyons of newspapers fell on top of her, and she couldn't get out from underneath it. And, you know, nobody knew that she was in there. The other thing that happens is when something breaks, you're either too embarrassed to ask for help or help can't get there. So in this West Virginia house, the refrigerator broke about 4 years ago. They were too embarrassed. They had money, they had the financial resources, but they couldn't, there was no way you could get it in or out because you'd have to, in hoarding, they call it churning when you move one pile from one space to another, but you're just churning It's like the way algae churns in the ocean or something. So, and I've done that with my little piles, right? So, you know, it's all a matter of degree. So, so in my experience, it's mostly these two different kinds of challenges. One is the tendency to get overwhelmed about the stuff, and it's whether it's emotional clutter or physical clutter, financial clutter, whatever it is that I'm holding on to that's an obstacle. It's easy to get overwhelmed, and it just kind of takes a life of its own. Or it's the attachment clutter. I really can't let go of this because, you know, those are my dream journals, and I dream those. And, you know, and I start, you know, it's time to throw them away, and I think, well, maybe I want to keep one page or so. So I start reading them, and then, you know, and that 2 hours later, it's time for the hoarder show to come on. So I don't have, you know, so I'll come back to this in 6 months, you know, and you know, I just get fascinated with my turtles or whatever. So it's helpful to have support and friendly support. There was a study done on why nagging doesn't work. How many people think nagging works? You know it doesn't, but still it happens, right? Because it's irresistible to nag. That's one of the clutters, the relationship clutter. They were studying why nagging doesn't work. And the reason, the tendency is that if somebody gets nagged, the person receiving the nag will come up with the reasons why, with the counter reasons, right? Can't you throw those turtles away? I will, but I really like them, and our son might want them one day, right? I'm talking about a shoebox full of turtles. It's not live turtles, right? It's the trick, let me give you the one big hint about how to avoid a nag. When they studied why nagging doesn't work, it's because whatever the person says out loud, they're reinforcing it to themselves. So if the husband, for example, says, I will one day, but I really love these turtles, he's just reinforced his reasons for not throwing them away. So if you go paradoxical and you say, you know, those turtles are really beautiful, have you considered holding on to them so that you can give them to our son one day? And then he comes back with the counter and says, yeah, but I really ought to get rid of them. Score. Because he said what you're looking for. So if it's said to you, you're less likely to do it. But if you say it yourself, you're more likely to do it. So one, that's the paradox of nagging. So whatever conversation you have about whatever you're trying to get the man or woman or partner in your life to do, make sure that they're the one who says what the goal is and not you. Because if you say it, they'll probably counter. Does that make sense? Has everybody had that experience?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fascinated that could work. I mean, to say,
yes.
Like, Jeffrey, you don't need to get a job. Stay home with mommy for the rest of your natural life.
Okay. No way, Mom. Don't fence me in.
There you go.
I'm getting a job this year, but, you know.
Wind this up. I got to
yeah.
go.
This comes from the research in what's called motivational interviewing, which looks at what motivates people, and it turns out what people say out loud themselves turns to be predictive of what motivates them. So whenever you're working with somebody who's resistant, if they say the thing they're resistant about, like, oh, I'll get rid of that someday, but our son might want it, you've just lost the battle. So they've got to say, whatever your goal is, you've got to figure out a way to manipulate them to be able to say it, whatever your goal is. Be as manipulative as you can. I had a friend who was studying in Lewisburg at the osteopathic hospital. You know, if you're an osteopath, being a manipulator is a really good thing. They say, that's a compliment down there. Oh, he's a really good manipulator. You should see what you did with my back. Yeah. There are a couple things about things. Well, let me say one more thing. The feng shui thing is an interesting thing when something negative happens. I worked once in an office where the person that was the head of the company was a fairly abusive, tear people down kind of person. You get sent, you know, he'd call you into his office and everybody would say, oh, you know, and you could hear, I mean, just a horrible person to work with. And finally he got fired by by the board, and no one wanted to move into his office because it just had that bad vibe energy to it. And part of it was because everybody in the organization had the experience that when you went into that office, you would come out crying, including the guys. You know, it was just a terrible experience. So sometimes, you know, things have emotional attachments to us. You know, we probably all have something that we're wearing or carrying with us, whether it's a picture or, you know, this necklace that somebody gave me or I got on, you know, my dad gave me on my 18th birthday and I always wear it. Or, you know, we know the stories of the things that we have and the things that we wear. And the locations carry stories as well. So, you know, when a negative thing has happened, whether it's the association to the bad memories or whether it's really bad energy or bad vibes or bad karma or however you want to think about it, a lot of different religious traditions have ways of dealing with negative energy around things. Native Americans call it sponging, right? It's where you burn sage in the room or in the area or before a ceremony, they'll burn sage to the four directions, right? And that's a way of kind of cleaning out the thing. You know, incense get bad spirits go away. In the Christian tradition, the Orthodox tradition has an annual blessing of the home, and it happens between Christmas. When does it happen? It happens between Christmas and before Lent. And at the Greek Orthodox, the St. George's Cathedral, they've got two priests, and it's their busiest time of year because they've got like 2,000 homes to visit in this 8-week period, and depending on where Easter's falling. And if you've ever been to Europe or if you have friends who are Orthodox, you'll know that the blessings happen because they'll put the date with chalk on the lintel or on the front door, which indicates this house has received the blessing. In voodoo culture, and I once had a Methodist church in Newark, New Jersey, which was half Dominican Republic and half Jamaican, and they had a peace water tradition, and their previous pastor had gotten into some huge trouble and gotten fired, and they asked me to come in, and they said, you know, when are we doing the peace water? And I said, what's peace water? And they said, you know, when are we going to cleanse his office? And I said, well, I don't know, how much time do we need to get the peace water ready? And they said, we brought it with us. And, you know, it's water that the minister blesses. And, you know, it's like when you, you know, if you're doing a baptism or and you just pour it around the threshold. And that helps to clear out the room. So it's interesting how the ancient traditions have thought about the way that space and things carry memories or carry vibrations or carry energy, and that it's good to have that be sanctified or blessed or whatever. So that might be one of the ways to help your junk room if you have your minister come and say a blessing over it and let it go. There's a lot of stuff that happens around things and possessions and clutters at the time of death or after a death. When my mother died, you know, I basically left her condo full for 6 months. You know, all of her clothes in the closet. I just, you know, it was that overwhelmed thing. You know, I just didn't want to deal with that. And I remember when my father died, my stepmother, who was married to, you know, I went to visit her after a couple years after he died, and all of, you know, his chest of drawers was there, all of his handkerchiefs, all of his underwear, you know, it's all, you know, it was all right there. And so there's, you know, we get attached to these things in our lives, and they have great emotional significance for us. It's not just humans. I was watching the nature show back when I used to watch TV, and there was a thing about elephants and what happens when elephants die. Have you seen this show? It's absolutely amazing. So they were looking for the elephant graveyard, you know, where, because apparently when elephants die, it's hard to find their remains. Well, so they were following this herd of elephants, and this one elephant died, and I was amazed. Most elephants die from flea bites, which is also how most relationships die. Most marriages die also from flea bites. It's the thousand little things that reduce the resilience in the marriage. Sometimes it's the one or two big things, but often it's the thousand little things, and eventually the elephant loses its immunity, and then becomes easy prey. Well, this one elephant had died, so the camera crew would set up around it, and they just watched what happened. And if you've seen this show, if you have a chance to see it, it's amazing. I don't know if we were watching the same one. The elephant dies. The hyenas come in, clear the vultures come, clear the carcass, and then the bones are there. The elephant herd comes back, and they pick up the tusks of the elephant, and they pass the tusk from elephant to elephant. Have you seen this? It's absolutely amazing. It's like a ritual. This is what they do, and this wasn't a one-time thing. They knew that so they were hoping to get it on film, and they got it on film. And and after everyone had spent time, everyone, the elephants had spent time, in their snout, what is their trunk, passing it from, then they were ready to leave, except for that elephant's mate, who stayed an extra day and had trouble letting go, wandering around, I guess remembering, I don't know, what he was doing. But so there seems to be something really important about the way things help us to connect to the relationships that are important to us. So, I think that part of the trick is how do we value that and still not have to save everything? I want to talk a little bit, and I want to hear from you what your best tricks are for dealing with the clutter in your life, whatever that clutter may be. I'll share with you my favorite trick, which I got from Karen Kingston's book, is to take pictures of things I'm about to throw away. I have not yet taken pictures of my turtle collection, but I know that digital pictures, right? Now, some people are digital hoarders. I'm a digital hoarder. I've got three backup, every time a new size external backup hard drive comes out, I'll just keep on moving all of my digital hoard. I hate to delete a file. Anybody else like that? Just hate to delete a file. But at least it's contained. It's easy to do searches on. There's a lot of irrelevant stuff there, and someday, hopefully, the best. I've lived through a house fire once, and it was a great experience because I lost just about everything. And how clean and refreshing that was. There were some things that I regret having lost, but it didn't take long to fill the house, the next house up again. But so for me, the best tip that I've found in terms of getting rid of things is to take the picture of it, because then I have the memory and I have the associations connected with those memories, but I don't have to carry the thing around with me. All right, so any questions or comments or tips that you're willing to share about things that have worked in your life? I would love it if you all would share with each other and with me what those might be. You don't have to. There are no have-tos. Have-tos are illusions. Yes,
today,
please.
I cleansed my office. It was a great feeling.
Uh-huh.
We had two visitors from Wilmington, legal people, come to our office, and I was scared to death because I thought they were going to look in all my files and tell me something was really bad.
Uh-huh.
All they wanted to see was how many files, just how many, this many, that many, this many. That's all they wanted. I'm like,
from Wilmington.
Yeah, okay, here they are. But when they left, I got to thinking, why am I keeping all this paper?
Yeah.
I have almost everything on the computer. I keep everything on the computer.
Yeah.
I have folders, I file,
right.
Scan
it in and throw it away, right.
And
yeah.
I'm like, oh, I don't have to keep this stuff. And then they'll never want to see my files. So I threw
everything.
Wow.
I have a nice big office. There was nothing that I threw away that I needed.
And
I looked in those files and it was like, what is this? Why do I have this?
Yeah.
It was funny. It was like weird.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not keeping any more files.
That's fantastic. You know, and I'll do that sometimes, but nature abhors a vacuum, so I get rid of the turtles, and now I'm collecting elephant tusks, so you never know. But that's fantastic. And you know, and if there's a compelling reason, our church had a flea market thing, and I didn't have a compelling reason to get rid of some of my mother's things, but then here's something I believe in, that I would love the money to go to, and even though they sold this rug that she got in Marrakesh and brought back herself for $10, I let go of that because it was for a good cause and it was perfectly fine. But you know, I was holding on to it because, oh, you know, my mom said this was a valuable rug and I really need to hold out till that $500 offer comes. What the hell with it? $10 was great. It cost more mental, you know, the cost of mental clutter in my mind holding on to that. So that's a wonderful story. So just that realization that...
I feel great today.
Yes, fantastic.
It's great feeling.
Yeah.
I feel refreshed.
Yeah, it is a good feeling. All right, other tips? Other,
I always heard if you bring one item into the house, get rid of two.
Get rid of two?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
I had a friend.
That's a good rule of thumb.
I do that. I just make sure it's my husband's eye.
I had a friend in Colorado whose deal with his wife was he could bring anything into the house as long as he got rid of something of equal weight. So we were at a bookstore, and he's there, kind of measuring how much does this book weigh and what could I get rid of. But they had moved like three times in 5 years, and she just refused to move that box of whatever again. There's a trend, and so there's a guy who's blogging about this. His goal is to live with 1,000 things, only 1,000 things, and that includes utensils don't count as one. You know, each fork counts as one. 1,000 things, which, you know, if you think about the things in your life, and could you boil down to 1,000? That's, but there are a lot of people, you know, who live with, you know, 10.
Is it a generational thing? I mean, is there a generation that suffers more from, not necessarily hoarding, but feeling you need it for stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, is there a generation?
I think it depends on the nation's history. When I lived in New York City, I had clients who had been victims of the pogroms in Russia, and they had the same things that folks who had lived through the Depression in the United States had gone through, where they couldn't throw things away. Yeah. You know, you could say obesity is a form of clutter. You know, it's personal clutter. It's you know, in that sense of overeating that we have in our culture. Other thoughts or comments? Other tips that you have?
I liked what you said about the origin of the word clutter and
comes. That's interesting, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
And
I'm thinking
and circulation, how things don't circulate.
Well, and I mentioned to you and probably a couple others that my sister-in-law has hoarding tendencies and. Before they moved and she lives with her mother, and before they moved from one house to their current house, over time, her and my mother-in-law's family is all from Columbus. She's like one of 14 children. And years ago, they would always get together and come over for dinner, and they'd play cards and stuff. And I noticed that over time,
it stopped happening
yeah. little by little. People stopped coming.
Yeah.
Because, number one, they felt uncomfortable, and number two, it got to the point where all you could do was navigate through a pathway, and it wasn't, I am fairly confident it was not my mother-in-law's doing, it was my sister-in-law who has emotional things, she was trying to fill with all of this, but people just stopped coming. And now that they've moved to their other house, and this will be hard to imagine, but I went up there and cracked the whip.
with my husband and said, because my mother-in-law's an invalid, and I said, we have to have this house such that she can navigate with her wheelchair through. So we're here to help you. And since they've relocated, people are starting to come back because it feels more comfortable. They can move through the house without tripping over a stack of newspapers.
It really becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because people stop coming over. You know, how am I going to fill that time up with? Well, I might need these newspapers or I might need these magazines. Yeah. And then, you know, so it just takes a life of itself.
The only remnant of what was going on in the other house is they don't have an answering machine anymore because it's full. The old one is full of messages, is from my sister-in-law's aunt, who was a favorite aunt, who passed away.
Right, and they don't
And it was
let
the
go.
Last message that she ever left on their phone. And she's afraid if she unplugs it from the wall, it will delete all of those messages.
Right.
And I just want to shake her. Yeah. So we just left it plugged into the wall. Yeah. And
she should really keep that message. She shouldn't let that go. Yeah, but I ought to get out of the But, you know, that's where, you know, you could do a digital recording of the recording.
Right.
You know,
I mean, there's a solution to it, but it's getting her on board to literally pull the plug on that.
Yeah.
So I like that, the way you phrase that. It's interesting.
One more, and then it looks like we're way over time. So one more tip, anyone? Any tips on how to get home without hitting a deer?
Go slow.
Go slow, yeah.
Well, to your point,
did you have a tip?
Yeah, I have a friend who's really good at recycling things and giving things to people in need, and I don't like having yard sales because I don't like to waste my time and make a couple bucks.
Yeah.
So I have a shopping bag, and every time I have clothes that don't fit me or anything I want, books, anything I want to get rid of, I put in that shopping bag, and when it's full, I give it to her.
Brilliant.
And she has people she makes good use out of it with.
Right, right. And there are people that are really good at those things, and they're really useful to have, and they appreciate.
She appreciates
that, and you appreciate her.
She'll come and say, that coat you gave me, my friend that has arthritis, can't hardly move, and that's the lightest weight, warmest coat she's ever had, and she really appreciates that, and I was just getting rid of it.
Yeah, and it's that circulation idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just keep the circulating.
You don't feel like you're throwing it away because you think somebody's going to use it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think that's why we hang on to things. There's still life left into this, so I need to keep it, but if you can find a new home for it, then makes you... Well, I want to know what happened to the woman in
on TV.
Well, if you watch the show, which is repeated endlessly,
I taped it.
You know, after that, after you do your work, and she was not attached to the garbage on the floor. That just needed a snow shovel. She was just overwhelmed by it. It turns out her boyfriend had died, and he was the house dad. And he was the cleaner of the house, and after his death, she was overwhelmed by everything, and so she really missed the... Now, she had a hoard of plastic horses that she was, you know, she was going to her IRA and selling, you know, and buying these plastic horses for $3,000. Yeah, I didn't know there was a thing about... She's managed to sell some of them for like double the amount she bought them for, which is like, you know, so that's good. But, you know, if you're, what she really needed was a spark, you know, somebody, and Rita, the professional organizer, did that. And, you know, 30 days later, the film crew comes back and part of the thing from the therapy viewpoint is, the producers of the show are looking for entertainment. I'm trying to do therapy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're having a therapy session in the room there, and the producer will say, cut, and then want to film it from a different angle. And then I'm supposed to have the exact same spontaneous conversation, you know, which is supposed to, from an entertainment point of view, bring tears up again to in her eyes. And, you know, so you're kind of a little bit at cross purposes, but it really, I mean, overall, if you watch the show, it's amazing the progress she made. The house looks like Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you. And, namaste.
We have a little gift.
Oh, you do?
Token of our appreciation.
Another thing. Is it a turtle?
No, but it's...